The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Jordan, you're a great professional. Tell me you're going to get absolutely rotten tonight, like me.
Possibly.
Come on, Jordan, go for it, lad. Enjoy yourself.
Cheers, Cara.
So fans are back in Anfield. The Reds put on a superb homecoming display, and there's a young keeper causing a real stir. It's the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hoversall. Full compliment today with James Pearce, Simon Hughes and Keeva O'Neill. Loads of positives to talk about. Even a few players returning from injury. This is the Red Agenda, and right now, if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can give another subscription as a gift for free. It's the perfect present for any footy fan this Christmas. Enjoy great analysis, in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. Wave goodbye to 2020. Say hello to 2021 by sharing the gift of The Athletic's unrivaled football coverage for the whole year. Can't think of anything better. It's the perfect present for yourself and for someone else. So head to theathletic.com/LiverpoolPod. That's theathletic.com/LiverpoolPod and sign up right now. So 5 months since Liverpool were crowned champions and the fans finally got their moment with the players. Brilliant to hear Bring On The Champions pre-match, and it was a special night. James, let's start with yourself. You were there. Did it feel important to you?
Oh yeah, it felt massively important. I think you could feel the difference just on the short walk to the stadium from Stanley Park. I mean, it was just so special to, you know, see people around, you know, the outside of the ground again, and you know, people queuing to get in as soon as the turnstiles opened at 6 o'clock. And Klopp said himself that, you know, he'd referenced in the meeting with the players pre-game that he said, you know, we don't really know how much difference it's going to make. He said, you know, if it's great, then let's use it. If it's not, we have to ignore it, because I think he was wary about, you know, over-egging it too much, because, you know, it was 2,000 people surrounded by 52,000 empty seats. But it made a huge difference, and I, you know, the impact was there for everyone to see on every Liverpool player, because I think they were energised by the soundtrack that was provided. It was, you know, Klopp described it as, you know, goosebumps from the moment they walked out to warm up, and you know, I had no idea that 2,000 people could make quite so much noise, and it inspired a very special performance.
Yeah, and he said that at the end, Si. He's so great with his words. He said, look, 10 months ago, if you'd had 2,000 in Anfield, you'd have been a little bit wary of the whole thing. Oh,
come
James,
on,
put
James.
Your dog away.
Fuck Milo.
Milo, get out.
did you
see the picture of the press conference on Friday that James put on, where he had the cat across his computer? And it's just thought, what disrespect to Jurgen
Klopp. Like he's trying. Sounds like he's fighting with the dog.
Right, I think we're back.
It sounds like you threw him out the window there,
No,
James.
No, that was the cat that got launched. They just have to be separated at times.
Let's resume this Red Agenda podcast. Simon, Jurgen said at the end, and it was brilliant the way that he spelt this out. He said, look, 10 months ago, if you'd had 2,000 fans in Anfield, you'd have thought, what the heck's going on? But it gave him goosebumps.
Well, it's often the simplicity of his words, I think. And I saw the programme notes, and you know, he was saying there about how a lot of people just come to appreciate the most normal of things being the best things, really. And I've got to be honest, I haven't really found the allure of Anfield being quite the same without any fans, and the temptation to go to matches just really hasn't been there on a personal level. And I think you could tell last night watching the game. I mean, I was watching it on TV, and I think it did lift the team. I think the team plays with an extra bit of, well, there was extra tempo in the performance. There's been times in games over the last couple of months where I think they haven't really quite gone for the throat, and they certainly did that last night, and it certainly helped the performance, and you could tell that they wanted to put on a show for the people that were there. And it's funny, isn't it? I think that sometimes at Anfield, you know, if that game was played in front of 55,000-60,000 people on a Sunday night, it might be, even in a full house, it might be quite quiet. But last night it sounded really loud, even on TV with 2,000 in there. So it was just great to see at the end, you know, obviously Klopp celebrating with the fans the way he normally does. He actually looks quite relieved, I thought, on his, you know, his facial expression. He looks like a happy man just because of the simple things. And yeah, I think it is a big moment, because I think it gives people all a bit of hope that next year will be better, and eventually we'll have, you know, more or less a full house back in all the stadiums. I think all the games this weekend that I've watched, actually, not just at Liverpool, have been better for it. There's mm-hmm. been a bit, it's felt like there's been a bit more riding on the games, and players have been just a bit more aggressive and adventurous, apart from Tottenham maybe in the second half.
it's the simple things that Klopp does. When he came out and he fist pumped at the very end, Kiva, it was really significant.
That felt like the most exciting moment of the year, didn't it? And I wasn't even at Anfield, just waiting for it on the telly. And I was looking at my mum and I was saying, he's going to do it any minute. Come on, Jürgen. And we were sort of waiting for him. And then he did it. Like, to be one of those lucky fans there last night, who must have just obviously felt that in the cop. Like, you know, the fans haven't been able to be with this team in the most historic moment of all, when they lifted the title and when they won it, you know, in those final few games. So for them to be back there last night, just before this horrific year is over, it was lovely, wasn't it? And I mean, the cameraman had an easy job last night, didn't he? Just filming actual people at the ground instead of just, you know, what's he been filming? A Dust Bowl dance? I'm not really sure. They kept panning to different fans and all the oldies in the crowd. I was tearing up. Like, someone posted before that the nan's gone viral, and someone else said the granddad's gone viral. I think Wally Williams was his name. And I'm just like, oh, this is just lovely. Like, this is what it's about, like, fans. And it's been horrible, hasn't it, not being able to go to the match and enjoy watching this team play. And even if you can't get to the game, I think watching it with fans is, like Simon mentioned, it's just a completely different feeling. It just, that felt like my favourite Liverpool win ever, because it just felt like something, a little bit of our soul had sort of returned. And yeah, it was lovely, wasn't it? And obviously it wasn't just the crowd there. Virgil van Dijk was in attendance, which I think really boosted everyone, didn't it?
Yeah, so important. Let's go to the game itself. Dominant Liverpool against another of those sides that people were saying ahead of the match, oh, they could cause Liverpool a problem. We said it about Leicester a couple of weeks ago, James. Wolves, well-organised, disciplined, but, you know, Liverpool just a cut above, really.
Yeah, they certainly were. I think Nuno probably summed it up best when he said, you know, we just couldn't handle Liverpool. He couldn't handle the intensity. We couldn't handle the pressing. He said they just couldn't get hold of the ball for any sustained period. And it was the second half when Liverpool really, you know, cut loose and tore Wolves to shreds. But even first half, I felt they were very comfortable. Mo Salah punishing that mistake from Connor Cody for the opener. And, you know, when they perform like that, they're almost impossible to stop when there's that combination of quality and energy and, you know, the organisation in every department. I thought defensively, they were immaculate. And I thought Nico Williams again, you know, great to see him perform to that level. I mean, Andy Robertson, you know, you run out of superlatives to describe his form this season. And, you know, Matip and Fabinho are cementing the kind of partnership that we didn't know that Liverpool could possibly have without Van Dijk and without Joe Gomez. So, the midfield in terms of, you know, Curtis Jones, what a night for him. He just grows in stature, doesn't he, with every performance he plays for the club. And you know, I thought Henderson was absolutely outstanding as well. And then, you know, it was a big call by Klopp to leave Jota out against his former club, but I thought Firmino as well, you know, more than repaid that faith, because there was some of his old sparkle back on. Yeah, it was just a night absolutely jam packed with positives, and it was just really nice to be able to talk about the football more than, you know, the fact that we're talking about the football, we're not talking about VAR, we're not talking about rows over TV scheduling and five subs were eulogising about the brilliance of an amazing team who were putting up a really strong defence of their title.
You mentioned Jordan Henderson and myself and Si. So we were talking about this before we started the pod, just the energy that he inputs into the game. For me, he was the standout player. I just think Liverpool are an entirely different beast when he's involved in the team and he's playing to that level.
Yeah, I think since Liverpool won the Champions League, he's just played in a different sort of way. It's like he knows now that he is a top quality player. You know, he's got vindication of that. I think there's always, maybe he's been undermined a little bit by a bit of self-doubt, I think. But now what I love about him is the way, how quickly he gets the ball forward. You know, he doesn't mess around. Like when you think back to that, the game against Chelsea, when Chelsea had Christensen sent off at Stamford Bridge, there's quite a few occasions like that last night. For example, the Salah's goal, he speculated with the pass a little bit, put Cody under a little bit of pressure, knowing that, you know, Cody will be thinking about Salah floating around. I think he just got in his head a little bit. And it's that sort of speculative pass which gets Liverpool right on the front foot all the time. And I just love that. I just love that in his game. And when he's not there, I think you notice a big difference. And I understand, I suppose, like sort of the way people who don't support Liverpool or have an interest in Liverpool, when a Liverpool player is doing well, it tends to be the same accusation that Liverpool fans or journalists, I suppose, are bigging the players up too much. But I do think now that he's one of the best midfielders in Europe, comfortably the top five or six midfielders, you know, easily. He's not in terms of his playing ability, but his influence on the team as well. Because when he plays like that, when he's so aggressive, when he's charging everybody down and leading the fight, I just think it makes a massive difference to the way Liverpool play. And I thought it was interesting that the Klopp played him in a slightly more advanced role and put Wijnaldum a bit deeper last night. Normally, you would have expected it to be the other way around, but I thought it worked really well, actually. So, yeah, he's having a great time. I mean, he's obviously, as I said, Champions League winning captain, World Cup Championship winning captain, Premier League winning captain. You know, it's incredible what he's achieved over the last couple of years, and it's just been great to watch a player who, coming into the latter stages of his football career, he's not a young player anymore. It's like he's hitting his peak now. Then I think he's sort of defied sort of modern convention when people say, oh, you know, the sort of the best players, they're sort of past the peak when they get past 27. I think he's really hitting it at this time because he's not losing his energy. He's not losing his influence. His passing ability, I think, has become better. He's just been superb, and it's absolutely crucial that he's available, I think, until the end of the season, because as James has just said there, I think the performance is a reminder of just how devastating Liverpool can be and explains why they're still the team to beat.
Yeah, and just looks like he loves the responsibility. There's a few others we should pick out. Let's talk Andy Robertson and Gini Wijnaldum, because the amount of minutes they've played this season, Kiva. Robertson, more than anyone, he's been the consistent, while everyone else in the team has been sort of struggling with injuries at times and what have you. He's been the consistent, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think Liverpool have needed that, haven't they? Just someone who's always been there, because that's how you win titles, isn't it, with the same team almost. But obviously Liverpool have been so hit by injuries that just hasn't been a possibility. I think that was Robertson's 22nd star for club and country this season. You know, he's just an absolute monster, isn't he? He took a knock, didn't he, against, was it Ajax, and just carried on. He just seems the type of player to be, like, playing every game with it. I think he played, like, was it last season? He had, like, a bit of a sort of injury, didn't he? But he just played through it. He's that kind of player. It's like, you know, if it's not preventing him from running and doing what he does best, which is flying up and down the wing, then, you know, he's playing, isn't he? And, you know, sometimes he does get caught short, but he makes up for it. And, like, I think that risk is worth it, isn't it, in the end, with him being so high up the pitch. And, I mean, I thought on the other flank, Nico Williams was outstanding. You know, for some of the criticism he's had in recent weeks, he's a brilliant young player and deserves lots of credit for his performance. And then, obviously, Trent comes on and does the business, as always. But, yeah, Robertson's just a machine, isn't he? And just someone you need in your team, one of those captains who's just someone you can look to. And especially when the defence has been so, you know, it's had different players in it every week, hasn't it? Different keeper. He's there just to be that one constant source of, right, this is where we hold the line, this is what we do. And, I mean, you know, Matip and Fabinho were excellent as well. as was Kelleher in goal. But yeah, he was just phenomenal, wasn't he? And I think rightly so, he got man of the match from Ali McCoist, who was doing the commentary, a brilliant, brilliant commentary it was, by the way. And he rightly got it. I mean, I think he was a little bit biased being a Scot himself, but you couldn't have picked the man of the match. It was one of those games, sort of similar to Leicester, where you were thinking, who is the man of the match? Because all of them, like all of them were brilliant. And then obviously Ginny Wijnaldum. Is he underrated anymore? Can we keep saying this? Because I don't think he is. Like, we talk about him all the time, and maybe he's not getting the wider sort of coverage that he deserves, but Liverpool fans love him and speak about him every week. You know, there's appreciation tweets after every game. Obviously, he was asked, wasn't he, after the game about his contract, and he didn't want to comment on that, and I guess rightly so. But, you know, it'll be dire if Liverpool lose him. The way he's been playing this season and the past few seasons for Liverpool, it'd be a massive loss to lose him. He's such a phenomenal player, and it was great to see him get his goal, and what a finish it was.
Yeah, I mean, after the fist pump, James, the goal was the moment of the night for me, probably because the way they celebrated together. I mean, it was a special goal anyway, wasn't it? But the celebration was fantastic with the team itself.
Yeah. I mean, it was what Liverpool are all about, and it was pace and incision on the counter-attack, and then, you know, really intelligent movement from, I think it was Mane and Salah to distract the defenders and give Gini Wijnaldum the space he required to bend that ball so brilliantly into the top corner. And it was, you could just see how much, you know, he's such a popular figure, Wijnaldum, within the squad. You know, you could see that from the way in which he was engulfed by his teammates, and, you know, also a classy touch from him heading towards Virgil van Dijk. And, you know, he's said, hasn't he, he's going to continue doing van Dijk's celebration in tribute to him whilst his pal is on the sidelines. So, I think, you know, when Wijnaldum performs to that level, you know, you can't help but go, you know, talk about his, you know, his contract situation again, because if he does leave on a free at the end of the season, which still looks like the most likely scenario, then he is going to be a massive loss, because aside from his quality, you know, we talked before then about Robertson and, you know, his kind of unbelievable bounds of energy, and, you know, just you know, the fact that he's always fit, he's so robust, and Wijnaldum's very much in that same bracket. I think, you know, I look back and, you know, I think that's 11 successive starts for club and country over the last 5 weeks, and, you know, at a time when players have been dropping like flies and Klopp's had to rotate a lot, he's been there through thick and thin. And, you know, again, after the game, he kind of just batted away questions about his future, said, you know, I've told you, you know, the stuff about the contract, you need to ask the club. It's not for me to talk about, which, you know, and again, I think, you know, there was nothing really in his words there to really give you any more hope that he will stay beyond this season. But, you know, you look at it and you just think, you know, he's such a good fit for this Klopp team. And the relationship is clearly so strong between him and the manager. And yes, I know it's not an easy situation, because, you know, he's going to be going on 31 by the end of his current contract, and Liverpool don't dish out long lucrative extensions to players who are past 30. But I just think he's such a special player that sometimes, you know, there have to be exceptions to the rule, just like there was when Liverpool went and wrapped up that deal for Thiago. So, I really hope that they can get around the table and still sort out a compromise. But, you know, clearly with that, you know, January isn't far away, and he could sign a pre-contract with a club overseas. And, you know, it does look like this is Wijnaldum's last season at Liverpool. And if that's the case, you know, regardless of what happens between now and May, he'll walk away as a true legend.
It's crackers that we're still talking like this, Si. Goodness me, we've talked about it so many times on the podcast, haven't we? But he says he pretty much wants to stay. Klopp says he wants him to stay. And yet, as James is talking about that, it still feels like he's leaving at the end.
I can't get my head around it, really. I mean, I think obviously a lot of people compare it to what happened with Emre Can a couple of years ago, and who, let's face it, was a younger player than Wijnaldum. But if I'm being totally honest, I thought Emre Can's importance to the team was grossly exaggerated, really. I don't think that Wijnaldum's importance is. I think he's an integral part of the starting 11 and the squad, and the personality of the team as well. You know, he got the captaincy after Henderson went off last night. He's one of the higher ranking players within the framework of the squad, a player who other players like. And I mean, last season, before the pandemic, I watched a lot of games from sort of lower down in the stands. I may have mentioned this before, but I think that when you're close to the pitch, you just realise just how effective and how brilliant he is. I mean, he never gives the ball away, ever, despite, you know, the position that he plays, where he's often under the most pressure and has to release it quickly. And he gives the defence, the full-backs, the two centre-halves, a lot of cover, really, in front of them. And I just think to let him go, I agree with James, I think I don't see that him as a player who loses all that energy. There's a bit of Milner about him, you know, in terms of his endurance. And I could see him still playing for Liverpool in 3 or 4 years' time. So for me, you've got to try and find a way of keeping him. I think he's a really important player. I understand, obviously, Curtis Jones, we haven't really discussed him, but I thought he was brilliant again last night. And he's showing signs of becoming a top, top class player, I think. You know, is maybe the question marks a few years ago about his personality, his maturity and stuff like that, and whether he really wanted to do sort of all the dirty side of the game. But I think he's clearly been watching Wijnaldum, because he's doing all the stuff that he does and then trying to contribute in the final third as well. So I think maybe that's coming into the consideration at Liverpool a little bit, but it's proven that this season that particularly in that area, the pitch, you know, it tends to be the area that has the most changes in the course of the season. And if there's a way of keeping him, I think Liverpool have got to do it, because he's Wijnaldum for me has been one of the most important signings that Klopp has made, in terms of he fits all the things that he wants in his team. And to lose him, I think it'd be a major blow for Liverpool. I can't understand from his point of view why he'd want to leave Liverpool as well. At the moment, Barcelona in absolute crisis. There's more articles this week, I think, about, you know, the financial state of the club. Real Madrid are way behind. They're in the middle of a rebuild. There's not many teams that you'd want to go and sign for, I think, that are going to be able to. He could be missing out on a new part of Liverpool's history, where they go and dominate the league. I can't understand why you wouldn't want to be a part of that. So I think there's got to be some concessions from his side as well.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is The Red Agenda. Thanks for listening. Your exclusive Liverpool Football Club podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. I'm Steve Hothersall. We have Kiefer O'Neill, Simon Hughes and James Pearce. Let's talk about the pride of Cork, who a couple of games ago wasn't really on anyone's lips, but two clean sheets in both the Champions League and the Premier League, numerous top-class saves, and Kiefer, he's cool as ice. He looks so chilled.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant, isn't he? You know, I watch him at the academy this season, and, you know, he's a good goalkeeper. You know that straight away. And the fact that he can, you know, hit the ball with both his feet is a massive, you know, bonus for any goalkeeper, especially in Jürgen Klopp's team. It's now surprising me how he hasn't sort of got a chance sooner, because he's a goalkeeper who, I thought Adrian's done a good job, a solid job when he's come in, but he's not a goalkeeper that, he fills you with a little bit of dread, doesn't he? Like coming for corners and stuff like that. Last night watching Kelleher, I wasn't worried at all at any point. There was no worry at all. And Wolves are an attacking side. They're a good team. You know, this was meant to be another big test for Liverpool, as every game last season was, oh, here come whoever. And, you know, Liverpool just passed the test each time. But for a 22-year-old to put in a performance like that, and it was 0-0 when he made that save from, I'm not sure who it was, but it was like he just tipped it round the post. And
oh, Pudence.
Yeah, I just think, you know, to have that, like, you know, that ability anyway, you can see that having trained of the world's best goalkeeper and Alison Becker is really, really paying dividends, isn't it, to Kelleher's game, even if they couldn't spell his surname right in the first half. But
go on, just explain that. It was on,
He had a shirt, didn't he? But it was Kelleher, but it was without the E after the double L. So then in the second half, he came back out and they had it spelt right. But, you know, it's they're getting used to it, aren't they, I guess, the Irish names.
You two have got something in common. Names that no one can spell, Kiefer.
I know, it's interesting because obviously he's Quivine, but I'm Kiva because my family are from Derry, so they don't pronounce it in the Gaelic way. So it's very confusing for people on Twitter who keep asking me how to pronounce my name and telling me how to pronounce my own name. And I'm like, I don't pronounce it that way, but, you know, it's great to see my namesake there doing a job for Liverpool. And I tell you what is lovely, having an Irish player playing for Liverpool, like obviously, you know, most people in Liverpool have got Irish in them somewhere down the line. And I just know how passionate the Irish fans are. And, you know, I know a lot of our listeners will be from Ireland and, you know, they'll just be absolutely overjoyed that the lad from Cork is doing a job for Liverpool. And, you know, that's what they want. Thousands of Irish people come to every Liverpool game, you know, when it's in a normal world. And just for them to have a lad playing for Liverpool just must feel so, so good. And I spoke to my uncle last night in Ireland and, you know, they're just like absolutely buzzing. Like, you know, there's going to be kids in Ireland now getting his name on the back of shirts, hopefully spelt right. But, you know, it's that kind of little inspiration, isn't it, that we all need.
Just clarify for us the pronunciation of his name. I was asked this 1,000 times last night. I've covered under 23 games for a few years. We've always called him Quiveen. Is that correct?
Yeah, Quiveen, I would say.
All right. Because I know the goalkeepers call him Queeve. I was talking with John Achterberg the other day. Is that a different pronunciation of it, just so everyone's on the same page?
No, that's just the C-A-O-I-N-H, right. Would be Queeve.
All right.
Technically. But obviously for me, it's not. So I make... For me and everyone in the north would be different. But
gotcha.
Very, very confusing, I know. But look, we've got a little cat on our hands, haven't we? He's brilliant.
A top cat.
And, you know, long may it continue.
James, I mentioned I was talking with John Achterberg the other day about him, and he said exactly what Kiva just said then. Training with Alisson Becker has taken him to a different level.
Yeah, and I think you could probably, you know, make parallels with Curtis Jones in terms of you don't always have to go out on loan, do you, for a young player to take the next steps, especially when you're training with, you know, the absolute best in the world in your position. And, you know, Jones and Kelleher are examples of that. You know, Liverpool thought about sending him out on loan last season, but in the end they couldn't really, with, you know, Mignolet leaving, Adrian coming in, and obviously Alisson getting the injury when he did. And then, you know, even going back to this summer, Den Haag in Holland, I understand, were very keen to kind of give him the first team football that I think probably Liverpool felt would have been great for his development. But, you know, on the other side of it, they couldn't leave themselves short. And he's a quiet guy, Kelleher. You know, you speak to people around the place and they said, you know, he's not a big, boisterous personality. Just, you know, he's a real, you know, model professional, gets his head down, works hard, listens and learns. And Liverpool have been, you know, hugely impressed by his development. And the decision to throw him in against Ajax last week probably, you know, raised a few eyebrows. But, you know, I just think, you know, Adrian's form had been that patchy that it wasn't really a big call to leave Adrian out. It was just whether Kelleher was ready to step in and deliver. And he deserves massive credit because, yes, he'd had a bit of a taste of it before, but it's a big leap from, you know, playing in the League Cup, again, you know, in the FA Cup to against lower league teams, to suddenly playing in a, you know, a really important Champions League game and then your Premier League debut. And speaking to a few people about him last week, it was interesting how Liverpool came to actually sign him in the first place back in 2015, because it was actually a recommendation from Conor Masterson, you know, who'd played youth football for the Republic of Ireland with Kelleher. You know, he told Liverpool's staff back then that he thought they should be taking a look at him, and he was over having been for a trial at Man United. So Liverpool got him down to the academy and liked what they saw and decided to go for it. You know, he only cost Liverpool £30,000, which I think it's fair to say he's repaid that a few times over with those back-to-back performances in the last week.
But for the full story on Kelleher, go on The Athletic and read about the boy from Cork, because Simon's done the most in-depth piece on his history that you're ever going to read. I don't think he's left anything out on his youth period. He was a striker, Si.
Yeah. Well, his story's been floating about social media for a little while now about his background playing up front for Ringman Rangers in Cork, and it's a really great story, I think, in terms of, you know, from his point of view, the transition from striker, just the element of fortune around it. The team that he was playing for, I think they were under 14s, and they had a goalkeeper who was actually underage for that group and decided that he didn't want to play in that group anymore because he was finding the matches and the games a bit too hard in terms of the overall commitment because he was playing so much. And that left the manager at Ringmarn without a goalkeeper. And they finished training apparently on a Thursday night, and Quiveen's father, Ray, called him and said, you know, why don't you put Quiveen in goal? And he was like, well, he's our best striker. You know, he scores 20, 30 goals a season. His name was like well known across Cork as being one of the best players. He was getting picked for sort of the county side and playing all these prestigious tournaments. And they had quite high hopes for him. So it was a real sort of left field shout. Like the manager had never even seen him playing goal other than in, you know, knocking about at training when they're just messing before and after sessions. And he was really unsure about it. So he spoke to some of the other coaches and they were like, I don't think this is a good idea. You know, like we're going to be missing our best strikers. Surely there must be somebody else. But in the end, they sort of went with the father's advice and just gave him a chance. But then in that first game, he apparently made a big error. The cross came in, windy pitch, flew straight over his head. They lost 1-0 and it was his mistake for the goal. But he otherwise played really, really well, apparently, and recovered from that mistake and showed that he had sort of the personality and the temperament to not be defined by his errors, really. And from there, you know, I spoke to quite a few of the people around the club and former teammates, and they just said his acceleration in terms of his development was just astonishing. There were several other goalkeepers in the city who were better than him, and he just raced past them, just found it really easy. And as James said, you know, there was a lot of interest. I think Aston Villa and Blackburn wanted him as well, but yeah, he ended up at Liverpool. And to me, he looks a really, really good goalkeeper. I mean, the save that Kiva mentioned there, I thought was top class save, footwork, and got his hand-eye coordination right and everything else. And, you know, I think it helps the team that now they know that they can go backwards and there's somebody who's comfortable with the ball at his feet. I think with Adrian, it's been a bit of an awkward fit at times. He has made some great saves, some point-blank saves. He's obviously had some bad moments as well, but I just think it helps the whole structure of the team when they know that there's somebody they can knock it back to. And there was a pass, I think, in the first half where he put it right through the throat of the pitch, and I thought, you know, Adrian's not going to do that. So, yeah, it's a real find. I was thinking about it the other day, and I know obviously Everton fans sing about Seamus Coleman being 60 grand, but you know, for the 30 grand that the Liverpool pays for Keller is looking good business at the moment, isn't it?
Undercutting. Cork has got a new hero in Quiveen Kelleher. We wish him well for whatever performances lie ahead. This is the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall, James Pearce, Simon Hughes and Kiva O'Neill. Let's talk about the title race, perhaps for the first time this season. It's nearly a recognised top six, James. So if you look at the top six, bar maybe Arsenal not being in there, Leicester are, but the margins are tight. And of course, for Liverpool pretty soon, it's a game with Tottenham. And you wonder what their ambitions will rest on. How do you view the top six at the moment?
Just think it is going to be a really tight season. I think just the way that everything is with, you know, the jam-packed schedule and with COVID and the demands being placed on the squads, that you know, it is going to be a bit of, you know, survival of the fittest in terms of who can keep their key personnel fit for the longest periods. And you know, I think Tottenham have to be taken seriously now. I think they've, you know, that was, you know, another big step forward for them, you know, yesterday winning that North London derby. The thing with Tottenham, I think, you know, so much relies for them on keeping, you know, Kane fit. I think, you know, if he was to get a muscle injury that ruled him out for 5-6 weeks, I think that would hurt them in a way that Liverpool would be able to cope without one of their front three, you know, if something did happen on that front. I think, you know, Chelsea as well, you've got to give them credit for, you know, we wondered how quickly they would be able to bed in new signings. And, you know, I think there's signs now that, you know, they are going to be a force to be reckoned with over the course of the season. And, you know, Man City, again, you know, winning at an absolute canter. You know, they were never going to be stuck in mid-table for long. You know, they aren't far behind. So for me, it's a four-horse race, I think, you know, between Liverpool, City, Tottenham and Chelsea. But I wouldn't swap Liverpool's position with anyone else's, because, you know, I think it's unbelievable when you think of
all the hurdles thrown in Liverpool's path so far this season. You know, all the injuries, the positive COVID tests, the shambles over VAR, some of the scheduling that, has riled Klopp. The fact that despite all of that, they're only off the top of the Premier League on goal difference. That gives me great heart for the weeks and months to come, because, we saw Trent Alexander-Arnold and Naby Keita making their comebacks from injury. You've got Thiago and Oxlade-Chamberlain. They should be back in the coming weeks as well. So, there's a huge amount to be positive about. But, clearly it's not going to be the procession that we were all treated to last season. It's going to be a fight, but Liverpool are in a great position.
Really interested, Kiva, to see how this game plays out. We'll talk about it in more detail next week, but Liverpool's next home game is against Tottenham, and of course, they're on, 65 games unbeaten at Anfield now?
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? I think I read this morning, it was like the last 30, other than that draw to Burnley, it's been like 30 wins, which is just relentless, isn't it? It's ridiculous when you think of it. And I think the fact that Liverpool score in every game, they're the only team to have scored in every game this season. We knew as soon as we lost Van Dijk and then Gomez, Liverpool were going to need to score more goals to win the games. But that necessarily hasn't been the case, has it? They've been scoring last night for fun just because they're a great team. Don't think they needed to score a lot to win that game. Defensively, they were quite astute and in control of the game. I think they're soon sort of catching up on the goal difference after the 7-2 game, aren't they? They're making up for it with games like that last night. And I think, Tottenham have had a great season after their opening day defeat to Everton, which kind of put people off them a little bit, and how Mourinho's going about his business there. But I watched that game and it's just, he's a class act as a manager, the way he just knows how to rile up teams like Arsenal. Arsenal completely controlled the second half but did nothing with the ball really, other than kept launching it in the box to no avail. Like James said, I'd much rather be Liverpool in the fact that they do score goals. And I think Jermaine Genus said it last night on Match of the Day. He said everyone thought Liverpool were going to go away with these injuries, fans would have been hoping for that, wouldn't they, rival fans? All these injuries are that Liverpool's, it's not going to be Liverpool's year. And that they've just took it up a gear. Every player that's played, the young lads that have come in, whoever's been there has just done a job. And I think that just speaks everything about how Jurgen Klopp is as a manager and, what's in place now at Liverpool. And I think we've got to mention just briefly that Timo Werner miss, because Liverpool fans are talking about him for a long, long time, weren't they? In the summer. And I only saw it last night and was like, wow, that was some, might be the greatest miss in the Premier League era. It reminded me of obviously Torres when he moved to Chelsea. Obviously then you do have to say he made a great assist at the end of the game for Pulisic. But wow, astonishing stuff, that.
Si, what are you more excited about, Liverpool against Tottenham or Mourinho against Tottenham?
Yeah. At the moment, I would actually say Marine.
You bad man.
Honestly.
Right, that game's definitely not been played at Anfield, is it?
Well, we should find out a bit more today, I think. I think the club's preference is to play it at Marine. I think it's just because, obviously Marine aren't going to win the game. But if they did win the game, it would be the biggest shock in football history ever. I think that's just incredible when you think about it. But yeah, I think it's going to be at Marine.
Well, welcome to hell, yeah. Rossett Park. Right, let's go on to an article that you've written, yourself and James, about secrets of the Liverpool scout. Really interesting, this. I'd encourage anyone to have a look at it, because there's so much that goes into scouting. The first thing that stood out to me was that Liverpool don't have as many scouts as other, what we'd label, big clubs. Why is that the case, Si?
Well, there's a number of reasons, really. I think the comparison that I made in the piece is with what's happening at Man United, where I think they've got more than 80 full-time scouts across the world. At least they did last year. I think that number's come down a little bit since. But yeah, their sort of strategy is to have a full-time scout in every major football playing country across the world, whereas Liverpool do it slightly differently. They have sort of scouts who have primary responsibilities and then secondary responsibilities, and it's sort of cut up into sub-regions. And there is a reason for that. I think Michael Edwards feels that it means that the scout looks at things with a fresher mind. I think when you're sort of looking at the same group of players, the same matches, the same teams, week after week after week, there's a feeling that the scouts tend to not question their own judgments, and he wants them to do that. So yeah, I mean, as well, I mean, the budget at Liverpool, one thing I probably didn't really get at enough is the budget at Liverpool isn't quite as big as it would be at Manchester United, who are, let's face it, still a wealthier club in terms of the revenues that they generate, which contributes towards that sort of context in the scouting. So he doesn't feel that just because you've got more scouts, it leads to a more effective scouting system as well. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, we try to sort of just explain the basics really of how it works at Liverpool, in terms of how, when a scout looks at a player, how do they file their reports and what they make their judgments on and what they are asked to do as well. Because I think over the last sort of 6 or 7 years, there's obviously been a lot written about Liverpool's scouting department, and it's gone from one extreme to the other really, where they were obviously getting a lot of criticism, you know, sort of 2013-14, and I still think some of that was justified. I think, you know, you can't just say, well, the people at that time, it wasn't working on the pitch, it wasn't, the players that they were signing weren't playing well for Liverpool, and a lot of them were moved on pretty quickly. And I think that the thing that needs to be remembered is that the manager is still very important in all of this. You've got to have a really good manager who's got a very clear strategy of what he wants to see in a player, and I think that helps any scouting system. But it's quite clear that since then Liverpool's sort of scouting databases has increased, which has allowed them to make better judgments. I think when Edwards, Dave Fallows, Barry Hunter all came in, it was in its infancy and not particularly extensive, and now all these years later, you know, they've got a historical database on players that they've watched, which means that, say, when they wanted to sign Sadio Mane, they had reports dating back to when he was playing with Red Bull Salzburg, and then similar with other players. I think one of the players that we used as an example was Alisson Becker and Firmino as well. You know, they had scouting reports that went back to his trials when he was in Brazil as a teenager. So all this sort of contributes towards a healthier judgment. And at this moment in time, I think it's fair to say that Liverpool are sort of leading the field according to what the manager wants and what his philosophy is and what his vision is, and marrying that with what is going on behind the scenes, you know, in the scouting department.
Yeah, because James, lots of clubs are going to get the same data in, aren't they? They'll have the same sort of computer systems, but I suppose it's how they interpret it, and then whether they can get a player without other clubs thinking that they're chasing them. So say, for example, we talked Diogo Jota, Fabinho, players that arrived rather by surprise.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing. It's Liverpool aren't the only club who use analytics and data. You know, all clubs have access to this absolute, you know, array of information on, you know, every player playing in pretty much, you know, any decent league around the world. But it's how you use that and how you interpret it. And that's where Liverpool have been so successful. And as Simon said, you know, the structure that they've got in place with, you know, a relatively small 12 to 15 global scouts, you know, works really well. And I think from the people I spoke to for the piece, I think what struck me was, you know, that good balance they've got between, you know, using the data and analytics, but also they still go in for the old school type of scouting as well. You know, someone said to me, you still can't beat, you know, having people on the ground, having people, you know, it's not just a case of watching Y Scout and, you know, on your laptop and studying spreadsheets. It's, you know, the value of having scouts at every ground, scouts who know intricate details about players' contracts, you know, whether it's release clauses and, you know, even, you know, the just little things like, you know, what's going on in a player's personal life. Have they moved countries before? How did they handle that difference in culture, the language? You know, what kind of different styles have they played in before, you know, under what managers? And as Simon said, you know, players may well, you know, move countries and everything, but because of this great system Liverpool has got,
they've got, you know, a huge amount of information on players that's passed around when, you know, say for example, you know, someone like Fabinho, and you know, when he, you know, someone comes across from South America, they already know a huge amount on them. So they're not making judgments based on 3 months or 6 months or 12 months. You know, you're talking like 3, 4, 5 years worth of information. And, you know, all of that has helped Liverpool make a succession of very shrewd decisions when it comes to recruitment.
Secrets of the Liverpool Scouts is on The Athletic right now. This is The Red Agenda, your exclusive Liverpool podcast. And let's finish with a look at Liverpool's next match, which is in the Champions League. Of course, they're already through, but you've been looking more intensely, Kiva, at some work that Midtjylland have been doing.
Yeah, some really interesting stuff, to be honest. I found it quite fascinating. I mean, as we all know, Midtjylland are a very fascinating club. They're innovative, and you know, when they merged from two teams in 1999 to make the one club, you know, since then it's been, you know, just a really fascinating journey for them. I keep saying the word fascinating because it really is. I mean, they've inspired so many clubs, including Liverpool. I think Jürgen Klopp was meant to spend a bit of his sabbatical after Dortmund there, but obviously he got the Liverpool job, so wasn't able to do that. Obviously, Liverpool have the same throwing coach in Thomas Grønmark, and they were sort of using football data in ways teams are commonly using it now before anyone was really doing it. And now they've basically created this school, which is, it's not an academy. It'll feed into the academy because I think their academy runs from the age of 16. But it's called gold mining, which is translates to gold mine, basically. And it's kind of based off Rasmus Ankersen's book, The Gold Mine Effect, and basically just sort of creating this school that is going to, what they think should make the best players in the world. So the perfect sort of environment for them to be, to go on and win the Ballon d'Or, basically. You know, I spoke to the CEO at the club, Klaus Steinlein, and he said, you know, he wants to, this team, obviously this is the first time in the Champions League, he wants them to keep being in the Champions League, but the real dream will be to have players from the Goldmine School. And what's quite interesting about it is it's on the same ground as the first team and the academy play. I think they're doing, similar to Liverpool, they're doing a bit of a rebuild. I think that'll be done in 2022. But, you know, right now the buildings that these 75 pupils are in from the age of 5 to 12, they look out the windows and, you know, they're seeing Midtjylland's first team play, and they play on the pitch next to them. So it's a school for obviously football, but also handball as well. The girls can play that. It just so interesting. Basically, the, you know, the, it's not just like sitting down all day and learning maths. It'd be learning maths in, you know, a physical way. So they'd be, you know, stepping forward to 2 add 2. I think the CEO sort of said, you know, you'd step forward twice and then step back and you'd realise that's 4. So learning in a different way with the bodies almost, you know, it's quite a physical school. I think they spend like 5 hours a day, you know, of activities. They've already, you know, saw a massive improvement in a lot of the children's education. There's been kids who've came to the school who couldn't read, and then within 6 weeks they can. It's like, it just sounds phenomenal, really. And like any child's dream, you know, any sporty kid out there, it sounds like, you know, what they're doing in Denmark is just so exciting and pioneering. And there's plans to make a school in London, because obviously their owner, Matthew Benham, he owns Brentford as well. So there's plans to open these schools across Denmark and across the world, and their hope is to, you know, create these elite athletes. But also on the other side of it, they want to create good people and good citizens. So, you know, they're working like closely with the UN's 17 sustainable goals and development goals, and they're sort of in every lesson. You know, they talk about them all the time, climate change, the focus on that kind of thing. Just like, it was so interesting to listen about it, because there's nothing like it in the world.
Really intriguing stuff going on at Midtjylland FC. Of course, Liverpool's next opponents in the Champions League. Many thanks, of course, as always, to Kiva, to Simon and to James. Hope you've enjoyed The Red Agenda, and we'll bring you another one in a week.